This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on February 11th, 2016. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
We'll now turn back to agenda item number two, which is draft advisory opinion 2015-14, Hillary of America. And we have Mr. Burkon and Ms. Lopez on behalf of the requester, and please join us at the table. Yes, Commissioner Weintraub.
I'm guessing that the original motion on late submitted documents didn't include this latest draft because it wasn't in front of us at that point. So I could make the motion if you want, or 15-6098.
It did.
It's included?
Yes.
Even though we didn't have it, even though it didn't exist yet?
It existed.
Wow.
It existed. We just didn't have copies of it.
That's very cool. Okay.
Steve is very prescient.
You know, that's awesome.
You.
Thank you. Good job.
All right. We have Mr. Wright and Mr. Knopp from the Office of General Counsel on this, and there have been some developments since we last discussed this. So, Mr. Wright, why don't you update us on the status of this request?
Thank you, Chairman Peterson, and good morning, Commissioners. Before you is agenda document 1569, which contains five draft responses to an advisory opinion by Hillary for America. The requester, again, asks whether DePaul University may provide a stipend and academic credit to a student who interned in the requester's compliance and vetting departments. Both drafts A and B had concluded that the provision of a stipend is permissible under the Act and regulations for legal and compliance services, but not for the student's other work for the campaign, and those drafts concluded that the provision of academic credit is permissible for all the student's work. Draft C concluded that the provision of a stipend academic credit is permissible under the Act and Commission regulations for all of the student's work, and now late-breaking developments. Draft D and E conclude that the provision of the stipend and academic credit is permissible because the stipend is provided for a bona fide educational objective and not for the provision of personal services to the requester. The Commission has received two comments on the request and two comments on the drafts. Thank you. I'd be happy to address any questions you have.
Thank you for that. So as you can see, there's been very little activity going on with respect to this draft since we last discussed this in this meeting. I guess, first of all, I just ask if any of my colleagues have questions or have any discussion. Commissioner Hunter.
Thank you, and thank you for your patience on this one. And thanks to my colleagues for their willingness to work with us on this. In particular, Commissioner Goodman has worked hard to get a draft with four votes. I have a couple of questions. One of them is a very quick factual one, and then a couple of legal issues. First, is my understanding correct that if a student at DePaul is in the Extended Studies Program, wait, let me rephrase that. If a student at DePaul could apply for a stipend through the grant program, regardless of whether or not they're getting credit through the Extended Studies program. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so you don't have to be getting credit to be getting the grant?
You do not.
Okay, thank you. And then the other comment I'd like to make, I don't know if this really changes where we go on draft D or not, but we've talked about the last, what we call boilerplate in the advisory opinions that we release here, which is, of course, you know, just a reiteration of the statute. And obviously we give guidance when people come in with a specific question. And so generally speaking, we provide the relevant legal analysis. What's the statement of the law? You know, often we cite the statute, the regs, and sometimes the E&J, and then we apply that law to the facts presented. And then one of the sentences in the boilerplate says, any person involved in a specific transaction or activity which is indistinguishable in all its material aspects from the transaction or activity with respect to which this advisory opinion is rendered may rely on this advisory opinion. The cite to 52 U.S.C. 30108 C1B. And so the issue here is that not so much for DePaul and the student here, because hopefully we'll be able to give an answer today to your specific request, but that sentence has to mean something. And so other people who are reading this have to be able to rely on what our legal analysis is to answer their question. And the threshold issue is, what is a material aspect here? And so I was a little bit more interested, and it apparently wouldn't garner four votes, to be a little bit more broad in the legal principle here, to say that as long as there's a bona fide educational purpose, a student would be able to provide services to a campaign because the services weren't for the purpose of helping the campaign. They were instead for educational benefit. In my read of Draft D, it's a little bit more narrow than that. So I'm just kind of thinking through under Draft D, what is a material aspect? And we've answered the question on credit, so that's not material for this conclusion. And the second question is whether or not this program is offered through a university and whether or not that's a material aspect to Draft E. And I guess that question is more properly directed to my colleague, so that's why I don't know if you want to take a stab at that, that's fine with me, but is there anything, you know, specific about a university that makes that a material aspect of this decision, if you want to take a stab at that one?
Yeah, and first off, thanks to all the commissioners for working very hard on this and for hopefully getting us a yes answer that we can bring back to the student today. I think in our latest round of comments, we tried to set forth a framework that could answer the question and address your concern, Commissioner Hunter, about sort of future guidelines, knowing that obviously the answer is limited to this request. And I think we believe that we sort of picked out two kind of important features here. One was the clear bona fide educational purpose that we thought sort of shone through the entire request, and we set forth a couple of criteria that we thought demonstrated that bona fide educational purpose, which, you know, part of which was the importance of this to the curriculum, part of which was the sort of status of the university and the tax rules under which it operated, and part of which was really the methodology by which these awards are granted, the rubric that's used, and the objective nature of it, which does not focus on whether or not the ultimate entity for which the student is interning is a political committee or not. But we sort of viewed those as proof points for a standard of bona fide educational purpose. The other point that we thought was particularly material that relates to that, but maybe is slightly different, is the fact that the expenses here or the amount of the stipend is actually clearly not tied to any amount of hours worked. It is really not compensation for the services. It is tied to the expenses that the student incurs, and in fact doesn't even reach that amount. And we found that to be persuasive just as under the statute, which talks about compensation for personal services, that here it is clear that there is no tie between the amount of the stipend and the amount of hours worked, which is more sort of typical for a compensation arrangement.
Thank you.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to particularly thank Mike Colombo on Commissioner Goodman's staff and Tom Moore on my staff, who really persevered through this long after I think commissioners were ready to throw in the towel. Ms. Hodelin owes two fine public servants a debt of gratitude for all the effort they put in on her behalf. For me, let me clarify one of the facts. Did Ms. Hodelin get credit for her participation, for the experience that she had on the campaign?
She did.
She did. Okay. And it's part of DePauw's program that, excuse me, sorry, I'm a little bit hoarse. Part of the program that in order to graduate, students have to participate in a couple of these experiential learning programs. Is that right?
That's correct. You have to complete two extended studies credits over the course of your 4 years.
We get into these debates. It happens from time to time, and it's always a little bit frustrating for me because somebody comes in and they try and construct a nice, tight request that they think ought to, you know, get the commission's support. And some commissioners have balked at providing an answer that is specific to the request that's in front of us, which is what the AO process was designed for. It says in the statute people have a specific transaction that they want to ask the commission about. They can come in and get an advisory opinion. And yes, other people, but it's for the benefit of those requesters. And yes, other people who are in a situation that is materially indistinguishable, that's a pretty high standard, from that person can also rely on that advisory opinion. To me, it is significant that it's a university and that it's a 501c3, as the Questors Council pointed out last time. The fact that it's a 501c3 demonstrates that this organization cannot participate in any kind of political activity. And we say in Draft E that both the Extended Studies Program and the Grant Program are conducted in a nonpartisan manner and not for the purpose of advancing political goals. I think if we were to issue an opinion that was more broad in its language and said, as long as you've got an educational purpose, you can provide a stipend to someone for their political work, we would find all sorts of organizations out there, 501c4s and other groups, who would be happy to set up a program, and I'm sure they would consult with lawyers and put bells and whistles on it and say that this was all a good learning experience, but the bottom line would be that staff would be provided to campaign without the campaign having to pay for that staff. Some other person would be paying for it, probably someone that we'll never know about. It would be it could turn into another way for dark money to be going into the campaigns and subsidizing the work of campaign organizations. I didn't see much of a risk of that happening here. But if we were to issue a more broad-based answer, I do think that would be a risk, and that's why, you know, you think Draft E looks like a lot. You have no idea how many drafts went back and forth before we got to Draft E. And I think that was my number one concern, that while I think that in this context, a student who's participating in a degree program in a university that has this kind of stipend program available for internships of all kinds, it's not limited to political internships, where we are allowing Ms. Hodelin to get this stipend puts her on even footing with all of her student peers who are participating in other kinds of internships for non-political organizations. She's required to have some kind of an internship for a couple of them in order to graduate. It's a, as I said, a broad-based program that's not set up to put people in political internships. As you pointed out, the subsistence stipend doesn't depend on how many hours she worked or the entity with which she is placed as an intern or the economic value of the work that she's performing there. And I'm satisfied under all of those circumstances that it would be a pretty convoluted way for somebody to try and provide staff to political committees to try and fund a broad-based internship program like this at a university that is providing interns to all sorts of organizations. So I think that the opportunities for mischief are pretty slim in this situation. Are there other kinds of internship programs that might also be okay, even though they might be materially distinguishable from this? Sure. But those aren't in front of us now. You know, we have to deal with the situation that's in front of us, and when other situations come up, we can deal with those situations. If you're worried about, if you want to consider it on a more broad based, in a more broad based way, and we want to ask counsel to draft an NPRM, you know, to provide more broad-based guidance in a rulemaking context, we could do that. I'm not sure that would be the that I think that ought to be our highest rulemaking priority right now. I can think of a few other things that I'd put in front of that, but you know, I'm willing to consider that if what you're concerned about is issuing broad-based guidance. But that's not what we're here to do today. We're here to provide an answer to an individual requester, and I'm hopeful that, as I said, with a lot of effort from staff behind the scenes and with the guidance of our general counsel's office, and Mr. Wright, Mr. Noddy, that I'm hopeful that we will finally get to a yes answer. But I'm here to answer this question and not to – I'm not concerned about what other people are going to be doing, because if they are doing something that's different from this, they're going to have to come in and ask themselves, or, you know, they can. Nobody's required to come in and ask for an advisory opinion, but it only applies to people who are the requester themselves or someone who is in a materially indistinguishable situation.
Commissioner Hunter.
The language actually says indistinguishable in all material aspects. So I think we owe it to the public to say what is material in our legal conclusion. And your answer was helpful, because now I have a better sense of what's material to you. It's material to you that it has to be university, has to be a 501c. They provide all kinds of different internships and some of the other stuff that you said. I don't necessarily agree that those should all be material, but I hear where you're coming from. I think what you're saying is that in order for it to be a bona fide program, that's the material part for this analysis. It's material to you. In order to be bona fide, those things have to happen. I just disagree that it has to be a university in order to be bona fide. And again, yes, it's a university that's asking the question, but we have to tell the public which part of it is material to our legal analysis. And I think I heard you say that the reason that it being a university is material to you, to speak to the bona fide nature of it, is because it's less likely that there is sort of dark money going through a university.
I think you and I just understand these words differently. It's not somebody out there who is in a situation that is indistinguishable in all material aspects from this can rely on this. That doesn't mean we're saying no to everybody else on the planet. But what is material, what is a material aspect of this is you're still looking at it in a rulemaking context. What's the broad-based rule that people can derive from this? There may not be a broad-based rule that people can derive from this. I'm not interested in issuing a broad-based rule in this context. I don't think that's what advisory opinions are for.
I think you're right that we just interpret this provision differently, and we probably have for a long time. I mean, thankfully, a lot of our AOs aren't terribly controversial, so we are able to spell out the legal standard. And then I went back and looked at a bunch of old ones, and that's pretty common, where I think we start, are you okay? You look like you're about to pass out.
Thank you. I'm fine. Thank you.
Where I think it starts to get dicey is, you know, this starts to look more like the Bob Carey AO, the one that we talked about in a different, seems like a year ago, but that was, I think, a few weeks ago, where that was just a one-off advisory opinion. And that one even went as far as to say, this is only for this guy at this situation at this time in history. And This AO doesn't have that, but this really does, to me, seem like we're just answering the question for that one person, which I understand that's not a problem for you. I understand where you're coming from. I just disagree with that, and I think we owe it to the public to not say, you have to come in and get dragged into this place and, you know, pay a lawyer and come, what is this, the third time you've been here, come here multiple times to get an answer. People should be able to look at it and say, oh, I know what's material and what's not. And if there's a material part, if I'm trying to do a program and there's something that's, make sure I get the words right, indistinguishable in a material aspect, then I do have to come to the commission. But I'm still not really understanding why it's material in a legal sense that it's a university. I mean, one of the programs that I was thinking about is, I think it's called Close Up, or there's all kinds of different programs here in Washington where they bring interns in from all over the country. And I think we had an intern here from that program. And I don't know if they get credit or not. My understanding is they don't always get credit. And it's not through the university. It's through a nonprofit organization that's not a university. And so I would think that those programs are also for an educational benefit, but those kinds of programs, my understanding is they wouldn't be protected by this AO. And I know you asked the question about the credit. Is the credit a material aspect for you?
The fact that she's engaged in a university program and she is getting credit and that it's a graduation requirement, all of that goes to demonstrate the educational value of this.
So it is material in this case?
I think the language on indistinguishable in all its material aspects, that is a factual, not a legal question. It's not for people to try and derive some broad legal principle from this. They have to look at whether their factual situation is indistinguishable in all its material aspects. Now, it could be that somebody else would be in a situation that was, in fact, distinguishable in some of its material aspects, and it might still be fine. But that's not the purpose of this advisory opinion, to give that kind of guidance to everybody in the world who might be setting up an educational program. That's for a rulemaking. I'm happy to engage in that process if you want to, but that's not what we're doing today.
Right. I mean, again, we just disagree, because I don't think we should be saying, and maybe not quite saying this, that everybody should have to come in and ask the question if their stuff is different enough. And I do think that it is relevant to the legal principle here, and unfortunately, Draft E doesn't really have, it has a bit of a legal principle, but it is baked into this program, and that's part of the reason that I'm having a hard time with it, and that's what we've been sort of going back and forth over since the last time you guys were here, because your original draft, Commissioner Weintraub, is similar to Draft E, because you've always said you do want to just answer the question for universities, and we were trying to pull you away from that, and I guess it wasn't all that successful.
Well, as I said, I think once you start stepping away from the universities, if we were to issue a broad-based ruling that says as long as you've got an educational purpose, you're home free, I think that we're going to see, if we were to issue that advisory opinion, Crossroads GPS, Priorities USA, all those groups out there would set up educational programs that, you know, they would have a learning component, I'm sure, but I think most people would look at it and say, it looks like you're really just trying to provide, supplement the staffing budget of the campaigns, and that is what I am not willing to do.
Sorry, Lee keeps humming in my ear, so it's a little distracting. Is that humming, or what is that?
You want to entertain all of us? Got a good song up there?
The Frankie Valli song, So Close and Yet So Far Away, came to my mind last night when we were at an impasse, and I haven't been able to get it out of my mind.
He's singing it to me, and it's not helpful.
I kind of thought it was helpful.
The draft that I circulated at some point, does have a generic legal principle, and then applies the facts here to that statement. It says that the commission finds that DePauw's status as an accredited nonprofit university creates a presumption that its internship program's purpose is educational and not political. So I agree with you that, you know, the fact that it is education accredited nonprofit university it establishes bona fides more than just some fly-by-the-night group. And so we applied the legal analysis to it and said it's a presumption. We can change the word presumption, but the legal principle in the draft that I was trying to sell was educational subsistence stipends for the purpose of assisting students in fulfilling bona fide academic objectives and not for the purpose of providing personal services to campaigns are not, quote, compensation for personal services. Or I know you have an issue with that last part, but something along those lines where it's a general statement of the law and then it's applied to say, yes, universities, you know, sort of probably more than anyone else, are a bona fide program. But it keeps the powder dry for people who want to argue or who want to rely on something and say at a later point that their situation is materially indistinguishable.
Are there further comments, discussion? Vice Chairman Walther.
Let me ask you this. I gather you've had a chance to review this draft?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A couple of questions. What would stop taking this into consideration? And this does remind me of a law school play where this guy's getting arrested, and he says, well, what about Escobedo? And the guy says, oh, what's your name? And he says, Smith. And he says, we limit it to the facts. And so the guy went to jail. So here, I don't think we have to. I think we should look beyond that kind of a scenario and say, okay, what about the Smith brothers, who might want to give $900 million to one particular campaign? And so they go to a number of universities who might be inclined to support a program like this and offer significant amounts of money for kids to participate. So it may not be partisan by the university, but the result is clearly a partisan one. Money, huge amounts of money spent. Say it's a super PAC. This isn't confined to this particular campaign. It's confined to anybody who wants to help in a campaign, regardless of whether you're a candidate or not. So the super PAC, I assume, could participate fully in this and fully fund universities, if they're universities or just educational institutions. I see there's not a clarity there exactly what we're talking about. But to fund that so that they have youth that are participating, and again, here it's like for 8 weeks for a contribution of $3,000, a little less than the minimum wage, throughout the country who are using that money for those kind of purposes. And I see in the one message that came through that if we deny this, that we would be hurting people who of color. But I think the point would be that some campaigns can't afford to do something like this, and some people can't. Some can, so that I'm not sure that if you're looking at the parity involved there, some campaigns you don't have a lot of money, and some do not. So it may be that the campaigns that have the most money or the super PACs that have the most money have the most opportunity to have programs like this that allow kids to participate in programs designed just for those campaigns. There's no doubt here that those who are working for this particular program are going to work for one specific campaign. So you can say it's not conducted in a nonpartisan manner, but it certainly has that effect. So those are my concerns. Do you have any thoughts about how could that seepage of political money potentially come through the whole system, never to be reported necessarily?
Yeah. I think under the
how can we try and take a look at that issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think under the standards set forth in draft D or draft E, the program that you described, Commissioner, would not be permissible, and clearly would not be permissible. I mean, I think regardless of which commissioners think whether particular facts are material to the ultimate determination that the program itself is for a bona fide educational purpose and not for a political purpose. There is broad agreement that has to be the applicable standard. And the program that you described is, sounds like an earmarked grant program that is specifically for a political purpose, that it may not specify the campaign that is the beneficiary, but if a donor goes to a university and says, we want to provide X amount of money specifically to put kids on campaigns, we're not within this advisory opinion because this program is absolutely not that. This is a program that clearly does not favor participation in campaigns versus participation in other opportunities with nonprofits and government.
So in this particular case, this particular campaign, Healer for America, could actually be the person participating could work for Bernie Sanders?
In this particular campaign, they could, if they had applied for the fact that they had applied for Hillary Clinton versus Bernie Sanders versus the NRA versus working for a local government.
I'm sorry about bringing up names because that really is not what we should be talking about.
No, but I guess my point is yes. But not only between candidates, but also between political committees and nonprofits, between political committees and government. And this is a pre-existing program that its rubric for deciding who gets these stipends, it does not take into account whether or not the person wants to participate in a political campaign versus take advantage of another opportunity. And I think that is actually if anything is material in this opinion, it is that particular standard and the set of facts around it.
So does that mean that the student can, in this particular case, if we grant this, can work for any campaign?
They would have to apply and go through the process, but I'm confident after reviewing the program and after reviewing the rubric that the particular campaign for which they applied would have no impact on the decision that the university had made.
Well, that's the point, though. I mean, this isn't the the foundation, the Global Election Foundation, puts a lot of money into educational systems and say, hey, here's 10 programs. Let your students participate in whatever campaign they want to participate in for 8 weeks and come back with your report and you'll get credit for it. There's only one campaign that can apply in this particular case, right? Especially since we're limited to the facts.
I'm slightly confused as to whether you were asking whether or not someone could have worked for another campaign or whether a program that limits the grant money to campaigns generally is permissible. Because I, under this opinion, I do not think that a program that is specifically aimed towards working in campaigns in general would be permissible. That is, it is explicit here that this is limited to those who are a program that is broad pre-existing educational purposes, not for the purpose of putting people on campaigns themselves.
Okay. I see there's some questions.
Yeah,
right.
Commissioner Rowell. Can I just follow up on that, though? Suppose under the scenario that was suggested by Commissioner or Vice Chair Walther, that the Smith brothers are giving that money, but the school already has a established internship program. And so who's going to make the decision that it's a bona fide educational objective when the school says this is a bona fide objective, here, go ahead, have this internship money, and yet it actually comes from this group that is prescribing a certain outcome.
May I interject? By referring to Smith Brothers, were you alluding to any set of brothers in there?
I didn't allude to anybody. It was Mr. Vice Chair who was... It was Mr. Vice Chair who raised that issue, not me. I'm just trying to follow up on, you know, what I see as the concern, because this answer to number two is that the stipends here are provided to students for bona fide educational objectives. And I don't know exactly how, I mean, while the school might indicate that, mm-hmm. and they might have an existing program, we don't know really whether it's actually in fact, and I don't think that it applies to your situation. Mm-hmm. We're looking at, you know, how this is going to be read given the discussion that we've had today already in the future. The fact that the school describes it that way, we're just going to, the FEC would just have to accept that, I presume, because they're characterizing their program that way.
No, I don't think the FEC would have to accept it. I mean, I think here we presented in detail the methodology that was used and the rubric that was used to make these determinations. And if the rubric that was used is that you are more likely to get this if you work for a political campaign than not, then I think we'd have a different set of facts here. And if it was, you know, if that was influenced by donor preference or for whatever reason, we'd have a different set of facts here. I mean, here we have a rubric in a system that treats applicants who want to work for a political campaign no differently than applicants who want to work for a nonprofit or a governmental entity. And it is that parity in terms of how these decisions are made that I think more than anything here is the driving fact. And if that piece changed, then we wouldn't be living under this advisory opinion.
And I think that's the important point to bring up here is that, you know, advisory opinions, we're under strict time deadlines. The process doesn't afford, you know, a fact-finding component. We accept the facts as presented, and the degree of protection afforded by an advisory opinion is only... it only covers the situation that was represented accurately. If it turns out that a requester actually the facts that they present to us are completely at odds with what the reality, then the protection of the advisory opinion is minimal at best in that situation. And I think that's something that we have to rely upon. It's not the case that if you can somehow come in and mislead the commission into issuing an advisory opinion that somehow, well, they snuck a fastball by us and now they've got carte blanche to do whatever they want. That's not the case under our process. I mean, your representations, we take them as accurate, and so long as they're accurate, then that protection would apply. And if they aren't accurate, then there are no guarantees after that point. Are there... further comments. I'll just, first of all, echo what Commissioner Weintraub said about the the stellar work done by Tom Moore and Mike Colombo in terms of keeping this train on the tracks. And as drafts have been exchanged, as ideas have been discussed, as you've heard just in the time we've been discussing this advisory opinion, there's been concerns about answering the question too narrowly or answering the question too broadly. And the hope is that we have the Goldilocks draft right here, that we just we answer, we can thread the needle without having to go too broad or too narrow, so that the concerns that the commissioners that may hopefully form a majority on this can have their concerns addressed with respect to this particular request, but also allow for the possibility that we're going to have others who may have different scenarios that they would like to present before the commission. And I think that there was a concern that we not bind our hands one way or another, foreclose possible other requests that come in, or give a total green light to others. So I think that there has been a delicate balancing act throughout this whole process. And I can support draft E, which has come in. Like any compromise draft, I think we all may be equally unsatisfied with certain aspects of what we would consider to be the ideal draft, but I think it gets us there. I think it's enough, and at the appropriate time, I'll be willing to support it. Is there any further discussion, Vice Chairman Walker?
Actually, what my concern is regardless of how it's phrased, I think it certainly is applicable to any super PAC or anybody else to be involved in exactly the same way this is involved. I'm concerned about the movement of money into the academic system in this way. I wouldn't be opposed to a rulemaking who really define this with more particularity, but I'm not comfortable with it. The Koenig opinion to me is clear law right now. It's been good since 1982. I don't think we should change it. And so I'm going to move at the appropriate time to approve draft A.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I just want to say I respect my colleague's point of view, but like counsel, I do not think this opens the doors to super PAC setting up internships. Those aren't the facts that are in front of us. I think that would be plainly materially distinguishable from the situation that we have in front of us. I just think that's an entirely different ball of wax. I wouldn't support it if I thought it said that.
Vice Chairman Walther.
Okay, one more word. I don't think it makes any difference in the way this would be applied, depending on who is the party that's trying to promote the program. In other words, there is this feeling that that would not be legitimate campaign work if it were somebody other than maybe a particular campaign. But good foundations, super PACs, or others who are involved will still be able to participate in a program like this, the way I understand it. And so as a result, I don't think we should embark on that without more clarity and more specific guidance, if that's where we're going to move away from the, I think, fairly clear opinion that we already have.
Commissioner Weintraub.
And again, because I don't want this to be misconstrued in a way that neither the Vice Chairman nor I would support. I respect your concerns about that, but I do not think the scenario that you're describing is not the scenario that is in front of us. And I just want to be really, really clear that when I vote for draft E, it will be on the understanding that that scenario is materially distinguishable from the one that is described here and wouldn't be covered by this AO.
Commissioner Ravel.
I'd just like to concur with my esteemed vice chair on this matter, because I think there's too great a concern. It's quite clear that corporate contributions are not appropriate, and this would open the door to situations we don't know under any circumstance whether or not a valid internship is where it's funded and how it's funded. And so there's nothing in this draft that you're talking about that would preclude that, actually. And not that they would necessarily say specifically that it must be the only internship that goes for political activity. I am too concerned about the potential ramifications of this, given the clear law that we have. And so I will support Vice Chair's motion.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I respect my colleague's position, but I am a little bit concerned that they are going to be encouraging people to read this broader than it is understood by the people who are voting for it, than it's understood by counsel. I mean, counsel is sitting there shaking his head. That would introduce new facts that are certainly not before us and are not part of what's going on here today. And in fact, I don't hear anybody at the table who is even contemplating voting for this suggesting that that would be okay. I've heard other kinds of scenarios raised, you know, the Close-Up Foundation or other types of groups, but the notion of a super PAC funding the internships.
I didn't use the word super PAC.
It's or a corporation coming in and trying to funnel money for a particular ideological group or campaign. That's just not what we have in front of us.
Any further discussion? Commissioner Hunter.
I agree with Commissioner Weintraub. But it is kind of nice to hear it could be read more broadly.
No, it can't.
It might be helping me, but I'm just curious about this because I think, you know, corporations donate to universities all the time.
Yeah, correct. That's right.
And so does that mean that the president of a university can't endorse a candidate because maybe his university is, you know, propped up by corporate contributions? And what about professors? Can they say, gee, I think, you know, Hillary's a better candidate than Bernie for all of these reasons? I mean, I don't know where that takes you if we start really looking into who funds universities in this country. I'm just confused. I who knew? I guess some people don't believe in the First Amendment on college campuses, but that takes it to a whole new level. I don't know where that to me seems so far-fetched that I don't know where it leads.
Commissioner Goodman?
We aren't legislators and we aren't legislating here, but there are legislative presumptions, you know, about what the bona fide educational purpose is. And let me just give just some context. You know, I went to the University of Virginia and I studied under Larry Sabato, who has tried to teach generations of young people that politics is a good thing and that you should engage and get involved. And he has students who come from Southwest Virginia, and I came from a poorer part of the state, the South Side, Virginia. And he tries to place those people in governmental congressional offices, in campaigns, in the governor's office. And he pushes these young people out to go engage in the political process generally at nonprofit advocacy organizations. And sometimes he has to try to find them stipends of money to get them engaged. And it shouldn't be offensive to the law that for that overriding and manifest educational objective, a few of the kids, instead of going to work in the governor's office or congressional office, end up on a statewide campaign. And so that is not why I'm voting for this, but that informs my judgment of the purpose for which this money is being spent and that it is not for the purpose of influencing these elections. And so on that, I hope we would entertain a motion. I want to give Commissioner Walther his opportunity to make a motion.
Yeah. Is there any further discussion, or are we ready to go to motions?
I have one more.
Commissioner Hunt.
Oh. When the next one's moved, if you want.
Okay. Commissioner Walther, would you like to
I just move adoption of a draft A.
All right. Is there any discussion on the motion? If none, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, no?
No.
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 Madam Secretary, the motion fails by a vote of 2-4 with Vice Chairman Walther and Commissioner Ravel voting aye, and Commissioners Weintraub, Goodman, Hunter, and myself voting no. Do we have another motion? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move adoption of Draft E as set forth in Agenda Document Number 15-69E, and of course authorize counsel to make any technical and conforming edits.
Thank you. Are there Commissioner Hunter?
I just went back through it, and I think that some of the things that might be material aspects to certain of us sort of in our heads aren't necessarily spelled out in the black and white on the piece of paper. And so, I mentioned this story to a few people. I was at the Iowa caucus a few weeks ago on vacation and at my own expense, and ran into somebody who was an intern for one of the campaigns. And I'm not going to say which campaign. I don't know all the details, but I'm quite sure that she was sent through a different program that, wanted her to experience elections. And she helped one of the candidates, and everybody in the airport — we were stuck in the airport for most of the day — thought that she had a pretty cool story. And she was really excited. I don't think she really cared all that much about who she was working for. It was more of an experience of seeing what it was like to knock on doors and get out the vote and all this kind of stuff. And I didn't ask her if she was getting academic credit, but I don't think she was. I'm pretty sure she wasn't. And so I've just been very interested in not foreclosing this, because I think it's a cleaner legally to state the principle and all the things I said before. But I don't think that the words on the paper, tie this to you have to have gotten credit, you have to go to a college, you have to go through a program with a college who requires you to take two independent extended studies things. I don't think that requires you here. I do think that this probably does, cabinet it a little bit more than I wanted to, but it does give some opportunity for other people to read this and have a program to involve students in our political process. So I will support it.
Commissioner Weintraub.
I just want to be really, really clear about this. If you, as I read this, it's part of the analysis. The program is administered for the sole purpose of assisting students with an educational experience. DePauw is an accredited institution of higher learning holding tax-exempt status under 26 U.S.C. 501c3. We're talking about students and what they need to graduate. If I do not read this as applying to anybody outside of the university context. That doesn't mean it's illegal outside of the university context. It just means it's distinguishable. That's not covered by this AO. Those people are no worse off tomorrow than they were yesterday. They're just wherever they are, and they're making whatever determinations they're making as to whether what they're doing is okay. But the fact that this is a university-based program is plainly stated is significant and material to me. If you think this says something else, this has been the problem all along, is whether we actually have a meeting of the minds. I'm willing to support this because it has all those facts in here. And I want to be very clear that I do think they're material.
Okay. If we could take just a brief recess. We have a motion on the table, and we will vote on that motion. And so we'll take a brief recess. That's definitely an acceptable excuse. I know in your recovery phase, so not a problem at all. We are now back in session. We have a motion on the table. Moving draft E, is there any Commissioner Hunter?
Thank you again for your time and your patience. I think without getting into all of it again, I'm just going to vote yes for the words on the paper.
All right. Is there any further discussion? If none, all those in favor indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no.
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 Madam Secretary, the motion passes by a vote of 4-2 with Commissioners Weintraub, Goodman, Hunter, and myself in favor, and Commissioners Ravel and Vice Chairman Walther opposed. Thank you very much, Mr. Burkon and Ms. Lopez, for not only your patience here today, but also for the materials that you've provided, which have been very helpful in moving this process along. So thank you very much.
We appreciate all your consideration and hard work on this. Thank you.
All right.